I also, prior to HeyJane, had worked a lot in international settings and in emerging markets and studied international development. And there you really do see how restricted access to reproductive health care and family planning services is one of the biggest drivers of lack of female equity and, you know, for women and people with uteruses more broadly, of general economic opportunity. And so I think both the sort of cerebral level of understanding those equity impacts as well as the gut experience of having it affect me personally came together to create the ultimate motivation.
Today, we are spending time with Kiki Friedman. Kiki is the CEO and co-founder of HeyJane, the five-year-old telehealth startup providing patients with medication abortion via mail and the telehealth clinic offering safe, affordable, and convenient reproductive and sexual health care. You may have seen Kiki's story in Inc. last year when she was named a 2023 Inc. Female Founder 200 winner. What Kiki is doing with HeyJane is saving lives. It's creating access in all of the ways that the word is defined. And let's just talk about three of the ways that we define access. First, it is a means of approaching or entering a place. So in layman's terms, it's a way in. Second, it's the right or opportunity to use or benefit from something. And third, it's an attack or outburst of an emotion. Yeah, I feel like all three of those work very well for this conversation. In this particular example, number three, for example, you know, when I read about the anti-choice zealots stripping away women's rights to control what happens to our own damn bodies every single day, I am suddenly overcome with an access of rage. Yeah, feel free to use that in a sentence later. The shoe fits. In this episode, I share my own abortion stories. Yes, you heard me correctly. I've had two. And I'm so excited to be with Kiki next week on stage at South by Southwest, an annual conglomeration of parallel film, interactive media, and music festivals and conferences organized jointly that take place in Austin, Texas. And we will be sharing the stage with Dawn Legenz, Executive Vice President and Chief Global Strategy and Innovation Officer at Planned Parenthood, and Dr. Rupan Gill, OBGYN, and CEO and co-founder of Vitella Global Foundation. Kiki, Don, Rupan, and I will be talking about why everyone is an abortion beneficiary. Because whether you are pro-choice or anti-choice, you, my friend, are an abortion beneficiary. Kiki started HeyJane because she saw a problem and she wanted to fix it. And I gotta tell you, I am so deeply drawn to people like Kiki. The doers, the fixers, the founders, the people who don't wait for someone else to solve a problem. And it got me thinking, when do we decide that a problem isn't going to be someone else's to solve and that, in fact, we need to be the ones to fix it? Let's find out. Kiki, I can't believe you're here.
I'm very happy to be here.
Kiki Friedman is here, y'all, and it's incredibly exciting. And this is going to be a conversation that I will likely listen to again and again because we have a lot to discuss. And it's also incredibly timely and relevant to what the world is experiencing, and specifically women, and more specifically than that, anyone who has a uterus. And so thank you so much for joining us. We are thrilled to have you here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what I would love to start with is what I like to dub a hype women headline. So this is sort of like a two-sentence descriptor of what I, as a external viewer of you, see you as and what you have shown up as to the world. It's going to be really difficult because of all of that you've done over the course of your life and career to synopsize this down to two sentences, but I did my best. And so I would love to read it to you, and then I want to talk about what might be missing, what the context is that is not visible to so many of us that are on the outside. Okay. Kiki Friedman is a 2023 Inc. Female Founder 200 recipient and the co-founder and CEO of Hey Jane, the most trusted virtual clinic offering telemedicine abortion care, helping more than 20,000 patients get access to abortion care via telemedicine and raising $6.1 million to expand its reach even further since its launch in 2021. Prior to founding Hey Jane while at Harvard Business School, Kiki was an early employer at Uber, launching Uber in Kenya and leading strategy and expansion for Uber Eats in the Middle East and Africa regions. Kiki, how old are you?
I recently turned 33.
No, that's not possible. I'm sorry. Based on what we've just discussed, I'm not a math person, but that math does not add up. I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around it. So we will get to sort of that and how that's all possible. But based on what you just heard, what are you not hearing? Because you know yourself best. You've been, you know, with yourself longer than anyone else on the face of the earth. And so what are we missing when we hear that?
It's such an interesting question. I mean, the first thing that really comes to mind for me is the input of the team that I've had supporting me throughout all of this. Hey Jane in particular, you know, we've had such an incredible group of people come together, bring together such a diverse skill set from clinical to legal to product to marketing. And there's just no way that we could have done anything without getting that really diverse set of viewpoints incorporated there.
So I love that. And I think it's a testament to you as a leader that you recognize the collective that is responsible for making anything happen. There are a lot of people in the world who have ideas. And then they go for a walk, right? Or then they go back to what they were doing. And those ideas stay in the ether, in their mind, and never come to fruition. Ideas mean nothing until you put pen to paper and you actually bring together the right group of people to make something happen, to take action. And that takes risk, it takes perseverance, and it takes courage. So where did that come from for you?
Where did the courage come from?
Yeah.
Great question. I think particularly in the work that I'm doing now, the courage came from just an internal anger in large part and just sense of fundamental justice for what people deserve as healthcare in this country and, of course, you know, the world more broadly. I think seeing a lot of those rights eroded in such a fundamental way, in ways that are so disconnected from science, from the political will of most voters, and just from sort of common sense, was enough to really compel a lot of action towards a potential solution there.
I think women's anger is one of the most important experiences and emotions on the planet because our intuition is really unlike anything else. And women's anger so often leads to action. It leads women to take, you know, it tells us when something is wrong, and then we go and we fix it and we find a solution. And so have you ever been told over the course of your life to not be so angry?
Good. Absolutely. And maybe not phrased exactly in those terms. I think, you know, as women, we often learn to express that anger in ways that might be perceived differently, but to be less ambitious, to be less bold, to be less imaginative in the way that some of these things might take form has certainly come up time and again. And yeah, I think learning to ignore it is one of the best skills that someone can develop.
It is. And I think, you know, if you're a person who sees something that doesn't exist, that so often can scare people. Because if they don't have that visionary outlook and they also are not willing to kind of push the limits, then expanding beyond that is really dangerous territory. So people that are especially founders that are breaking the mold, that are really tackling industries that are hundreds of years old, that are ripe for disruption. This is a space that makes a lot of people uncomfortable. It makes a lot of people uncomfortable. And what we know specifically about the femtech industry is that it is exploding, right? It's exploding. The global femtech.
At last.
And you think about it and you go, what the hell took so damn long? We're 51% of the population.
Exactly. And significantly more of that in terms of healthcare spend. It seemed like such an obvious thing. And it is incredible that it took so long for investors and others to realize that. But as you mentioned, it does really seem to be gaining traction now. And I'm so thrilled to see it.
It's incredible. And I mean, you're really at the forefront. You are locked arms with those women who are founding and growing those companies. Here's what we know. The global femtech market size accounted for $40.2 billion in 2020 and is projected to grow at an average CAGR. And we're going to talk about that because CAGR, C-A-G-R, means compound annual growth rate. Not everyone went to business school. I didn't. I got my MBA by starting my first company and doing everything wrong. So that's another way
a
to do it.
Better route.
Right? But the average rate, 13.3%. That is the compound annual growth rate of what's happening with femtech. And from 2020 to 2025, it's going to reach $75.1 billion. And now, a pause in the podcast to hype women. The founders of The Zeal of the Heel, Cynthia Benson-Mercer and Kimberly Rath, are the ultimate hype women. Leveraging their combined 65 years of experience as working moms and corporate executives, they are sparking a worldwide movement for women to look up and move forward. Their debut book, Now Near Next, a practical guide for mid-career women who want to move from professional serendipity to intentional advancement, debunks the myth that putting your head down and working hard is the best way to realize your fullest potential. Join Cynthia and Kimberly as they guide you page by page through a world of boundless possibilities, unleashing unapologetic permission to thrive. Damn, I want that. Between now and March 15th, Cynthia and Kimberly are gifting our listeners 10% off their pre-order price of their book purchase with code ELLA. That's E-L-L-A. And you can learn more and order your advanced copy of Now Near Next at zealoftheheel.com today. That's Z-E-A-L of the H-E-E-L.com. Now, back to our show. Okay, so you launched in 2021, but when did the idea start to matriculate?
The idea started to sort of percolate in 2019. So I was in grad school between my first and second year there. I was chatting with some of my friends from undergrad. We'd gone to school in St. Louis, Missouri, which at the time was one of six states in the country to have just one abortion clinic left in the entire state. And that summer, it was nearly shut down. So it sort of felt like this dystopian possibility that there could be a whole state in the U.S. with no abortion access at all. And of course, you know, things have gotten worse since then. But yeah, it felt like this sort of screaming problem. And at the same time, the digital clinic model was beginning to really come up, but had focused at that point mostly on issues like hair loss or erectile dysfunction, affecting mostly men. And I started thinking like, hey, is that a model that could be used for safe, discreet abortion care?
Is there anything specific or personal that pulled your heartstrings in this direction? Or were you really just, as a woman and a person, I don't know, a human who cares about the world, drawn to it? I'm trying to understand, like, it's such an important product and company that you've created. And so often when we hear sort of origin stories, it's because of something personal. Is that the case for you?
Yeah, I think that I thought about it in terms of both sort of like the micro and the macro level. I've certainly had many, many people close to me affected by access issues, both in terms of the stigma placed on it, as well as just the logistical barriers to overcome there. And so I think that really makes it deeply resonate sort of like in your gut. I also, prior to HeyJane, had worked a lot in international settings and in emerging markets and studied international development. And there you really do see how restricted access to reproductive health care and family planning services is one of the biggest drivers of lack of, you know, female equity and, you know, for women and people with uteruses more broadly, of, you know, general economic opportunity. And so I think both the sort of cerebral level of understanding those equity impacts as well as the gut experience of having it affect me personally came together to create the ultimate motivation.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what you've said before. We're solving a healthcare issue, not a political one. Abortion isn't political, right? It's healthcare. But we have been conditioned as society to view it as political because it's a very deliberate, specific message that a white supremacist patriarchal system has sent. And it's, you know, I always find it interesting that we are told not to talk about politics at work. And yet anything that has to do with gender or race is considered political. Mm-hmm. So those of us who actually represent the majority of the population and the workforce were silenced from discussing our lived experiences. And since the pandemic, when we weren't necessarily physically in person in these workplaces, having a conversation in the break room or, you know, next to one of our desks or when we go to grab coffee, that sort of same pressure of stop talking about things that are political transferred to the virtual space like LinkedIn, right? LinkedIn is essentially the largest virtual workforce. We have 900 million members on that platform. And so as a person who speaks up about this a lot on that platform, I get a ton of pushback from the people who are old school and say, you're not allowed to talk about this in a workplace. And it's like, well, yes, we damn well are. Yes, we damn well are. So where did that sort of perspective come from for you? And really, I think it's a really important message to continue to sort of beat the drum on.
Yes, I love this because we do see this on LinkedIn occasionally when we post something about our work and people respond saying, hey, keep this off LinkedIn. This is for business. This is our business.
It is our business. It's our business.
So I absolutely hear that. And it has been frustrating to watch that type of censorship take place within social media platforms. And then, of course, within workplaces, some more explicit than others. We saw after the fall of Roe, Facebook explicitly mm-hmm. banning discussion of abortion care within the workforce. And I love the way you framed it, that this is a significant part of our lived experience for a huge majority swath of the population. So to censor that is just to create an environment where people cannot bring their full selves to work, even, you know, despite all the lip service that might be given towards that end.
That's right. And I think, like, what I also think is so important about the language that Hey Jane uses, you are so inclusive in the way you talk about this experience, the experience of pregnancy and abortion needs. You know, there is a great post that said, transgender men, non-binary people, and gender non-conforming people have abortions too. I think that is an incredibly important conversation to continue to have so that we are not leaving out a huge group of people that are also experiencing not only these lives, but the horrible repercussions of an overturning of Roe v. Wade. What we know, right, is that forced birth, anti-choice, however you want to call it, it has nothing to do with children, has nothing to do with babies or life. It has everything to do with power and control over women. So you are, so much of your work, even though if we get down to, you know, the very finite reality of the product, is that you are creating a safe way to have medically assisted abortions. You are also at the forefront and at the intersection of this zeitgeist right now where women's power and bodily autonomy is in deep threat. Did you think when you launched, I mean, we didn't know that Roe was going to be totally overturned, but like we all kind of had these inklings for quite some time, but you truly launched ahead of that happening. How did Roe being overturned impact your business?
Yeah, great question. And just to respond to something you said earlier, which I completely resonated. You know, we do make, Hey Jane is an incredibly inclusive platform across a number of dimensions. And I think it's been really interesting to see, to your point, about how this is really rooted in control as opposed to reproductive well-being, how we've started to see the anti-choice folks now use playbook anti-abortion tactics against the trans community. Mm-hmm. And in another way that just restricts access to baseline healthcare, I think it just makes it all the more salient what sort of the end goal of it is. In terms of what we expected to happen at the time that we launched, I think we could definitely see the trend line. We'd already started to see across the country a number of clinics closing, a number of more restrictive laws being rolled out, attempts to functionally remove access to abortion, even within sort of the confines of Roe. But if I'm being honest, I did not think it would get as bad as it has. The people who we've added to the Supreme Court since have generally expressed that they felt Roe was settled law prior, even after, I think, the prevailing narrative was, you know, that the point of all of this was to make it a states' rights issue. And I think it's become abundantly clear that that's not the case. They've previously maintained that the point is never to criminalize the patient. Again, we've seen really disturbing shifts on that front. And so we expected it to get worse, but honestly, not this bad.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there's a lot of women and, you know, really anyone who really cares about the human experience who are very disheartened, terrified, concerned, and also a little bit pissed because we've been saying for quite some time, this is coming. Yeah. And so many of us were told we're being dramatic, we're overreacting. And yet here we are, here we are. And we, you know, I've always found it very interesting when you have people, a group of folks, a sort of focus that is so egregious, it starts out really slow because they don't want to shock people into completely combating against them immediately. And so they start to just serve up these small things. Over time, we all become desensitized to what's been happening. We've had, you know, we had unfortunately 4 years under a horrific person who should never have been made president, who really desensitized so many of us. And when we look at where we are now, if we look 6 years ago, we would have said, there's no way we will ever be there. That is the most far-fetched thing. And yet here we are. How do you stay motivated and positive in light of this being such an uphill battle that has so many people pushing that boulder back down against you?
Totally. I do think there is a lot to be optimistic about or to give hope. I think one of the things that I often remind myself of is that the vast majority of the population of this country does support access to safe and legal abortion care, even in many of the states that are rolling out the harshest restrictions. And so a lot of these actions are sort of in direct contrast to the democratic will of the people. But if our government is functioning as it should, and perhaps you could put a question mark on that. but it
that's
should.
That's another podcast episode.
Sorry, didn't mean to go there. But if we have faith in these institutions, then it should self-correct because people have seen the consequences of it now. I mean, rates of support for abortion access have only gone up since the Dobbs decision. I think now that people are reckoning with what it really looks like for people to not have access to this, not just those who are seeking elective abortions, but those who need this type of care for any of a myriad of other very legitimate reasons. And so I think with sentiment behind this, I think eventually that will put a constraint in what can feasibly be implemented from a political perspective.
That's right. And I think even in addition to those that are directly impacted by abortion, access to healthcare, I like to say that whether or not a person is pro-choice or anti-choice, they are an abortion beneficiary. Mm-hmm. Every single person is an abortion beneficiary because with the statistics, 1 in 4 American women will seek an abortion in their lifetimes. That means that even if you think you don't know someone, you do. That person may have not shared this with you, or it might be someone you interact with on a daily basis that you don't have that depth of a relationship with. Think about, you know, the way you walk through the world. You go to your coffee shop, one of those baristas likely has had an abortion, right? You go and you have a call with your financial planner, same thing there. All of the things that allow you to live your life, regardless of what you believe your political stance to be on this, is the world is ruled by women's access to healthcare and their ability to make decisions about their own bodies and their own lives. And to be as incredibly inclusive as Heyjane's language is, it includes many trans folks who seek abortion care, right? Medical abortion is an incredibly safe procedure. This is why you have created this access and why it is so deeply important. So I get really frustrated when we go back to what we were talking about, sort of this binary of like, is this political? Because the truth is, we're all benefiting from this, and we're all going to see the repercussions and the negativity that comes from the lack of this access.
Completely agree with all that. And just to sort of add some color to it, you know, a lot of our providers, I think all of them have worked in brick and mortar clinics prior to Heyjane, and they tell story upon story about those folks who are out protesting in front of the clinic every single day and harassing patients as they walk in, coming in themselves or with their own kids who need abortion care. And I think, obviously, it's incredibly frustrating to hear, but we try to do as much as we can to remember everyone deserves this access, and regardless of where they're coming from. But I think it really does speak to your point that everyone gets abortions.
Yeah, everyone gets abortions and everyone benefits from them. We are all benefiters of abortions. The other thing, you know, is pregnancy is not a monolithic experience. And so we have been sold this lie that it's this beautiful sort of journey that leads to the next phase of your life, when in fact it is for so many a depressing experience, a dangerous and even deadly experience. We've heard the devastating news this week of U.S. Olympic medalist Tori Brown's death, 8 months pregnant, 32 years old, and the autopsy has shown that she experienced respiratory distress and eclampsia, which is the onset of seizures or coma related to preeclampsia. We know that Black women are 3 times more likely than white women to die from pregnancy-related causes. And what's even more terrifying is that in the past 2 years, there has been a 60% increase in maternal deaths. So you are kind of at the beginning phase experience of what a potential pregnancy looks like and a decision around that. How are you feeling, and what is sort of Hey Jane's stance or future considerations around just the sort of life cycle of what a pregnancy looks like should a person decide to go through with that?
Great question. So, you know, we've developed our complete care model to provide holistic services in a way that is really beneficial for nearly every medical treatment. So we do provide access to clinical services and needed medications themselves delivered, you know, to your doorstep. But then it's also supported by on-demand emotional care from our team of professionals, plus, really importantly, a community of other peers going through the same experience at the same time, so that you could really normalize what you might be feeling in a non-clinical setting. And we find our patients really like that. We also see that the majority of our patients don't currently have a primary care provider. And so we do see a lot of appetite for ongoing and additional treatments from us. We do plan on expanding into a number of other treatments. And I think viewing both throughout the pregnancy journey and the reproductive journey as a whole are all areas that we definitely would like to and plan to expand to soon.
It's so deeply needed. And we also, we do need to disrupt this very sort of archaic medical system that we've all just signed off on being a part of and not pushed back on because we didn't have many other choices, like we discussed with this femtech industry truly taking over in so many ways. You are giving people options. And what happens with options is that people choose the best option for them. They choose the one that actually meets them where they are, that sees them, and that understands their lived experience. I personally had really challenging pregnancies when I decided to have 2 children. And it's not easy. It's not simple. And it's not this joyful experience for every single person. And so I'm so happy to hear that you are also thinking about that piece of this, because regardless of the decision that a person makes about a pregnancy, there are just hurdles. There are hurdles throughout the entire experience, whether that's to terminate the pregnancy or to continue on with it. And it's also just what we've seen in America in, unfortunately, 2023 is that it's actually quite dangerous.
Yeah.
And now, a pause in the podcast to hype women. Netta Jenkins is the CEO of Eridai, an AI-powered inclusive performance platform that democratizes, operationalizes, and quantifies inclusive efforts in a fun and engaging way. With over 15 years of experience advising corporations and diverse audiences, Netta has cultivated a substantial LinkedIn following exceeding 200,000, leading to a book deal with Wiley and the release of her book titled The Inclusive Organization. Dissatisfied with the mere 5% participation in inclusion efforts across various organizations, Netta took the initiative to create a platform, now called Eridai, that not only delivered significant inclusion results, but also helped to secure an impressive $8 million RFP for her former employer. A fearless innovator that transformed from an employee with a bold dream to securing the CEO position in her own company, backed by an investment from the very CEO she worked for. Whew! If that's not a founder story, I don't know what is. If you are interested in engaging all employees and driving business impact within your organization, visit www.aerodei.com and book a demo today. Now, back to our show. So I want to talk a little bit more about you, because we talked a ton about Hey Jane, but when I look at your previous work experience and the work that you were doing, and I see the through line, absolutely, right, of sort of you're a person who is deeply committed to equity and to access and to identifying those areas where that is lacking and creating solutions for that. Do you feel like you had almost this moment of metamorphosis where you decided to exit Uber and start your own thing? And when I say metamorphosis, what I mean is the definition of the word, a transformation from one thing into something completely different. We are seeing women across the board at different phases of their life, multiple times over, going through this metamorphosis experience where they are kind of like crawling along as a caterpillar, they cocoon, and then they come out and they break free and they fly and they're doing something that is much different. Did you have a moment like that?
Great question. I would say absolutely. And I would say more of the metamorphosis has occurred, interestingly, since I started Hey Jane. It's just been such a challenging but really rewarding and educational process. And so, I feel like I'm metamorphosizing every few months with the pace of learning that we have to go through. But yes, definitely. And I mean, I think especially in growing the team and going from our first group of like three people who sort of had to do everything ourselves to then scaling out where we can really begin to rely on more experts in their spaces. It's just been an incredible way to develop a lot of, you know, in a many personal ways.
Yeah. So being a founder is, I think, one of the hardest things to do. And it just requires a level of stamina and perseverance. And, you know, the term resilience, I have a complicated relationship with that word because I feel like resilience is sold to us as this badge of honor. But usually resilience requires that you've survived something. And so actually it's more of a battle scar. So what have been the battle scars that you have sort of navigated through this process?
I think the regulatory shifts is certainly one. It's been, and listen, we knew we were getting into this when we started to some degree, of course, but we have had to be so adaptive to so many really significant changes that are also so frequent, and they're impacting both our business model. So we have to respond in sort of like tactical ways of how do we keep providing amazing care to our patients today, while also reckoning with an emotionally difficult experience for our team as people who really care about what this means at a macro level. So for example, when Roe fell, when the Dobbs decision came down, in one day we had to make decisions like, hey, we have some providers who live in states that have made abortion illegal today. We intentionally hired at first with a lot of geographic diversity because we wanted all of those perspectives to be reflected. But, you know, overnight, now we're wondering if it's putting them at risk. Not to mention, how do we make sure our patients are staying safe and all of these things? We're doing that while also kind of grieving the shift and, you know, just the care landscape more generally. So I think those have really required the most resilience to sort of like get pushed down, but get back up again and keep fighting. And another area, I will say, where the anger really helps. They really help us push through them.
It's a motivator and it's an energizer too, right? Yes. Because I think grief is such a good word when you talk about sort of what so many have experienced with this specific topic, but just really any loss of a life or a decision or a choice that you thought you had, there is deep grief. And grief tends to be a very inward, insular experience. And so when that anger comes up, it's a motivator, and it also it causes people to seek out others that are like-minded so that we can use our collective power to drive that change. What have you learned about yourself personally, you know, over these past 2 years with launching, growing, raising capital, and navigating just a really tumultuous time?
Yeah. I think one of the main mindset shifts that I've gone through that I found to be particularly helpful is instead of focusing on doing things 100% right, just focus on doing the scary things again and again and again, and knowing that it will become easier and knowing that you will become better. Because if you try to maintain a bar of perfection in this pace of learning, it's just completely impossible. And trying to maintain self-reflection without self-criticism, I think, has been a really big focus.
failure is essential to success. Mm-hmm. And women have a real double bind when it comes to that, because we are, the expectations for us being successful are higher. There's less appetite for failure. And so it usually goes one of two ways. A woman takes a risk, fails, and in doing so, the perception is, well, this is why we don't have women do these things, because they can't do them well. Or she is risk averse and she doesn't take any risks and therefore doesn't innovate, doesn't push the limit. And then the perception is, this is why we don't bring women in to do this, because mm-hmm. they're not going to be the leaders. So it really does require that we just don't give a shit about what people think. I mean, you do have to get to a point where you say, these are all opinions, and opinions are not facts. And if I know what I'm doing is right, and I know that I'm staying the course, and I have people around me that are accepting of a fail-fast environment that is going to allow us to innovate, we will do something really transformational.
Yep. I think that that's so true. And I think that just maintaining the attitude and building the confidence in yourself that, like, there's a way to get it done and you just need to find what it is can go so far. Because I think especially initially, to your point, we thought there was one way to start a company, one way to fundraise, one way to hire, one way to set a culture. And those didn't necessarily always feel perfectly compatible with what we were trying to build. And so sort of releasing those confines and just recognizing that you could meet a different bar, or there is always a way to get it done, and it doesn't need to be the way that you've seen it done before. I think I've said that this system wasn't built for us, right? Like, it wasn't. And so trying to play by those rules, I think, can, in many instances, can just be a losing game. We kind of have to figure out our own way to make it happen.
It's completely true. It's rigged against us. And so if you play by the rules, you will lose, because that is how it's set up. You have to mm-hmm. actually break rules. And exactly, the system wasn't built by or for anyone who's a part of a historically excluded group.
Yep.
Therefore, a couple of things have to happen. System change, that is long and it is a grudging experience, but it is necessary because so many are inside of the system. But new system is also the other important piece, right? New ecosystem, new way of doing things. It's what you're doing at Hey Jane. It's what's happening with the femtech evolution and revolution. And it's what we've seen so many women starting their own companies, because they recognize that they are not going to be able to do things that the way they want to do them by existing inside of that old system.
Yeah. And I think the timing, I will say, I felt very heartened, because even since we first started, now when we go out to fundraise, the number of female identifying investors has gone up so significantly. I feel like we have a really beautiful community of femtech founders, digital health founders who are struggling through some of these same things, but having that caring environment, I think, just goes so far. And it does feel relatively new. So I think that, I feel very lucky to be doing this right now.
Talk to us about the fundraising experience. And, what we know is that less than 2.3% of VC funding goes to women. If you look at female founders who are women of color, particularly Black women, that number rounds to zero. And it went down in the pandemic as if we needed anything else working mm-hmm. against us. So what has the experience been like for you?
So listen, I will say it has been challenging. I do recognize I'm coming at it with quite a bit of privilege, being, a white woman. I went to business school, all of these things. And even still, it was hard. But I think focusing really on finding investors who do genuinely believe in you and your mission, and having the confidence to say no will make all the difference long term. And it feels sometimes like it's impossible to say no, because you don't know if anything else is going to come. Having that clear vision of the direction you do want to move and holding out for it, and then just finding ways to postpone fundraising or to be able to sustain that, can go a really long way. We have now gotten, I think, an incredible set of investors who really believe in what we're doing, who are fully mission aligned, to really believe in us. And so I feel incredibly grateful for that.
That's amazing. And I think it's the abundance mindset versus the scarcity mindset, right? The scarcity mindset, it cripples us, and it also makes us create snap decisions that are not always best for us long term, might suffice in the short term and might satisfy something really quickly, but only if we're willing to compromise ourselves, our values, and other pieces of us. So I think that's really important for you to say about saying no and also pausing sometimes. Like, yeah. You don't always have to answer in the moment or make the decision quickly. Yes. And again, the scarcity mindset makes you do that because you think, if I don't take this, then it's going to be gone. When the truth is, if they care, they want you, and they see it, they will stay. They will stay.
And now, a pause in the podcast to hype women.
Hillary Hittner is the founder of Hillary Hittner Coaching. As a certified professional coach who partners with individuals and groups, Hillary supports them in owning what they want so they can live more engaged and more alive than ever before. Hillary is known for her willingness to sit with the discomfort and see what's on the other side. With a commitment to authenticity and curiosity, Hillary creates and holds space for people to build deep self-awareness and find the courage to create the life, work, and relationships they want. Her background spans corporate, freelance, and nonprofit worlds, and with over a decade of experience as an actor, theater director, producer, and trained doula, Hillary infuses every conversation with a distinct combination of creativity, sensitivity, and fearlessness. She is dedicated to anti-racism work and breaking down barriers to justice, equity, and inclusion. Hillary is based in New York City and works with clients all over the globe. You can learn more at HillaryHittner.com. That's HillaryHittner.com. And if you heard my son yelling mama from downstairs, then you know what it is to be a working mother who also works remotely. I know Hillary does. Shout out to you, sister, and the rest of us who are just doing the damn thing. Now, back to our show. So I wanted to share a little bit of my own abortion journey because I think it's important to talk about. I talked about it publicly for the first time on LinkedIn when Roe was overturned. So much because I want to normalize this conversation. I want to destigmatize everything around it. And I do want to hammer down on the point that this is not political. It's healthcare. And so when I was 20, I had an abortion at Planned Parenthood in Ann Arbor, Michigan, when I was a junior. And, you know, the reason I had an abortion is no one's damn business. Right? I don't have to justify it. I don't have to validate it. I don't have to say something that makes you like me more or less because of it. All of that is, again, conditioning. And so I just think it's really important for us to not have to re-traumatize ourselves with the telling of this story for the entertainment of those that actually don't care about why we've made that choice in the first place. I think it's really incredibly interesting when we think about, when you look at heterosexual relationships that result in pregnancy that then go on to that person deciding to have that baby, the number of men that leave, mm-hmm. right? That just walk away at one point or another over the course of that child's life. And they don't have to answer to anybody. They don't have to give their reason or their decision where they decided this no longer was interesting or worked for them. And so we have to employ that same perspective to the idea of pregnancy because it is my choice what I do with my body, and it is my responsibility, whatever that choice is. Yeah. Therefore, no one else has the right to interfere with that. And as you can see, I'm wearing my It's My Body, It's My Choice shirt. So for those that can't see it, we'll tweet this out. I'm not on Twitter. Are you kidding me? Elon Musk is a psychotic person. We'll do it on Instagram. But like, so when I was 20, I had an abortion at Planned Parenthood. And when I was 40, I had an abortion using Hey Jane. I had it in the comfort of my home. And I am married and I have two children. So I think it's really important to talk about the fact that 6 in 10 women who have abortions are already mothers, and half of them have 2 or more children. I am that statistic. I am that statistic not because I want to be that statistic. I am that statistic because it is just the truth and the reality of the situation. And I found out about Hey Jane a year or so before I needed to use it. my husband was listening to a podcast and the Hey Jane ad came on and he was like, oh, Erin, you're going to love this. You need to pay attention to this company. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And little did I know, Kiki, that a year later, you would save my life. You would save my life. And so I hope that you understand and your team understands. You may not hear these stories because there isn't always the vehicle to share them, but you are empowering women to have control over their own bodies. And I had incredibly difficult pregnancies and horrible postpartum depression that was misdiagnosed, underdiagnosed. And honestly, like, I don't want to be that person again. And pregnancy is not a simple situation. And so I just think the work that you're doing is so incredibly important because it's not just about the pregnancy piece. It's also about women and people with uteruses reclaiming themselves and who they are and what they want their life to be.
Erin, thank you so much for sharing that story and for saying those kind words. It really does mean so much. And I'm so glad that it resonated in that way. It's what we're after, and I'm just very happy to hear.
And when Roe was overturned, I sent the Hey Jane link to every single one of my friends. And I was like, I think honestly, we might just need to stock up for people in our lives that are going to need this and are going to not have options. I sent the link to all of my friends who have daughters that are of reproductive ages because they are going to school in states where abortion has been outlawed. Just like you were saying, you know, one of the reasons why you started this company in the first place, like we have totally reverted back. We have regressed. We are sliding back and it is not acceptable. And so it's going to require people like you and so many of us that have the desire to continue to move forward, to do this work, to do this work. Okay. So I wanted to sort of wrap up here with this exercise that is really about what transformation is. It's what I think is happening to so many women. It's why I think we are the leaders and the people who need to sort of take us forward into the future. And so it's going to be three sentences that I would love for you to fill in. And you can say one word to complete the sentence. You can say a few sentences. It can be about you personally, professionally, a mix of both. It's whatever feels most comfortable and natural to you, but I think it would just be so beautiful for you to share this. So I want you to tell us, I was, I am, I will be.
I would say I was someone who saw a problem that made me feel a certain way and felt that I had something to bring to it. And I am now doing work that I find to be incredibly fulfilling. And I'm really happy that I took that leap, and getting to hear from our patients and from our team brings me just so much joy every single day. And I think I will be continuing to give it my fucking all, depending what happens, regardless of what happens politically, and knowing that providing the best care to our patients will always be just at the center of our focus.
We are deeply grateful that you have made this choice and that you're doing this work because you're saving lives. And I want to talk about you giving it your fucking all for a second, because my experience, especially if I'm a two-time founder, is in my last company, I gave it everything I had, and that was too much. So what you should consider is giving it everything you have to give it, mm-hmm. which, honey, is not everything you have. You have got to save some of that for yourself, because we so often do this. Women pay the passion tax. We do work that we care deeply about, and so we overservice and are underfunded, underpaid, underrecognized because of that. And so there does have to be some boundaries in place so that it doesn't get to a point where you are only taking care of yourself because you are now in crisis.
That resonates deeply. It is something I'm very much working on. It's really hard to draw boundaries, I think, in this work when you care so much about it. But I know it's what's needed to make it last. And so taking care of health and mental wellness and all of these things are areas I'm working on and prioritizing.
Well, because listen, we need you to be in this for the long run. And so I think selfishly, we need you to take care of yourself because we need you to be in this for the long run. And this is, you know, I had an incredible conversation with another woman who started an organization and grew it to 10 million members. And it was a volunteer position for 10 years. And she talked about power being finite and saying that so much of the time, power is actually, you have it for a certain period of time, you have it for a certain project, and then you need to pass it along. It's a torch. Mm-hmm. And so how do we ensure that you have people on your team and people in your orbit, whether they are your investors, they are your advisors, that take that torch at certain times so that you can also go and keep your flame lit in a totally different space that isn't specifically related to this?
Yeah, I hear that for sure.
Before we do sort of like the call to action, because we want to know, how do we get involved? How do we support you? What do you need at this point in your company's life cycle? I also just want to know, where did the name come from?
The name is actually a nod to the Jane Collective, which was an abortion network in Chicago pre-Roe that helped folks get connected with care. There were actually a couple of films that came out about it in the last year or so.
I love that. I love that. Okay, Kiki, what do we do? How do we help?
All right. Well, it sounds trite, but vote. It really is the biggest needle mover at this point. We also always recommend donating to abortion funds. They're doing incredible work always, and especially now, to help people get logistical access to care with travel and funding. And then sign up for HeyJane's Unwhisper Network. If you go to heyjane.com, there'll be a link there. We're always sending through updates on the news. It's a lot to track, and so we try to make it digestible, as well as other ways to get involved and to participate in action.
We will do it. We're here for you. We're grateful. Thank you for birthing this into the world.
Thank you, Erin. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for spending time with us today. We hope you feel motivated, inspired, and fired up to take on and burn down that patriarchy. We can't wait to see you again next time. Until then, please do your part to hype women. The Hype Women podcast is produced by Erin Gallagher and Melanie Scroggins. Original score by Alex Yuan. Please listen, subscribe, and rate our show wherever you listen to podcasts the most.